This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
I'm Dave Kattenberg, and this is 12 Canadians building a better world from the inside out.
So if we could get intimate for a moment, if we think about conception, it's nice if we're in a safe place. It's just a more enjoyable experience. Same with birth. If birth can be intimate, it's a more pleasurable experience.
So the outcomes of birth at home have been documented in the data set to be very positive.
Perhaps I'm a tour guide on that journey.
We've got a crisis in Canada where we don't have enough maternity care providers.
Midwives work really hard and don't get enough sleep.
Anything that requires you to leave your house at the drop of a hat is potential for burnout.
My name's Marla Gross, and I'm a midwife. Born in Portage-la-Prairie, raised in Brandon, and moved to Winnipeg and raised our family here. I consider the midwife being the guardian of normal birth, someone who trusts birth and educates and encourages pregnant women through their pregnancy, labor, birth, and early postpartum. We care for them until they're 6 weeks, their baby's 6 weeks old. Well, I didn't ever grow up thinking I was going to grow up and be a midwife. I didn't even know what a midwife was. But after the birth of my first two children, we moved to Winnipeg, and I heard through a friend at La Leche League, which is a breastfeeding support group, about her doctor who helped her have her baby at home. So with my next pregnancy, I called him and had an interview, and he said I looked fairly healthy and I looked like a good candidate for a home birth, and we'll go for that, plan for that. And I had my baby at home, and he got there in time for the placenta. My husband caught the baby. It wasn't the plan, but that's how quickly things went. And I was transformed. I said to my doctor at my six-week visit, I would love to help you with other babies, you know, who you attend at home, but I'm not a nurse. And he said, why don't you go to Holland? He was from Holland. Go to Holland and take the training and come back. And I had three children and a single income, and I didn't speak Dutch, so that wasn't really an opportunity or an option for me. But I did start teaching prenatal class and working as a doula. My goal was to help women feel good and love themselves and love their birth and love their baby more through their birth experience, through removing the fear and the anxiety and talking about trusting the process and trusting their body. And I remember walking out of the hospital after my very first birth, and I was in awe. And I walked out of the hospital and I felt like saying, the world needs to just stand still for a minute. A miracle just happened. And I feel like that pretty much after every birth, but I understand the world is not going to stand still. But I love the reverence that I think birth needs.
A midwifery means with woman. I also like the French, which is sage femme, which is wise woman. So you have the two things happening, the wise woman with the woman. So if you put them together, in my view, you've got sort of the whole package. Okay, my name is Elaine Carty, and we're sitting in beautiful British Columbia in the city of Vancouver at the University of British Columbia. I was the founding director of the educational program in midwifery in the University of British Columbia, which began in 2002.
And you're a pioneer.
I guess so, yeah. In the 60s, I went to the States to do a graduate degree in women's health and midwifery. And I really didn't know. I'm not one of the people who was called to midwifery. It happened to be there because I wanted to go study with a person who happened to be a midwife. But this person, whose name was Ernestine Wiedenbach, had done a lot of writing on healthcare communication and how to work with women in pregnancy and birth. And I loved her writing. It had a huge impact on me. And it was all about, primarily about listening and about validating what you're hearing with people. So I went to Yale University to study with her, and the midwifery came along with it. I mean, I had been working as an obstetrical nurse, and so I was, when I got there and got involved, I just loved it. And the Vietnam War was at its peak, and the New Haven riots were happening, and we were working with women who were socially disadvantaged, both economically and nutritionally, and having very large families, and who were sometimes coming back and having babies two, three times with us and saying, because this is the only time I have a good experience is with the midwives. That sort of began the reflection about what is it about midwifery care that has an impact on women. I remember very clearly the first one of the classes I did on postpartum hemorrhage here at the midwifery school in at UBC here, and I thought, I'm going to try something in this class. So we went through our usual stuff about, you know, why hemorrhage happens, what are the signs, what are the symptoms, what do you do when it happens. We went through all the science, right? And then I put up a slide of the death of Rachel, which is a Hebrew Bible, very famous story. And she had died, who knows how she died, but there she was in this painting dying with the midwife supporting her and another midwife holding the baby. And so I said, you know, people can die after childbirth. And postpartum hemorrhage in the world is, you know, one of the common causes of death. And the students, I could just see their eyes went to this painting, and there was silence in the room. And so then I also had a poem at the same time about death and childbirth. And so afterwards, the students said, "We remember everything about that class." I was pretty excited about that. And then I decided, okay, I have to start collecting digital images of paintings showing all aspects of pregnancy, childbirth, midwifery. I had just come back from a few months in Florence, Italy, and I was just intrigued by, even though it was religious art, I was intrigued by all the paintings of the birth of St. John the Baptist, the birth of Mary herself, and the birth, all these births, because there was always 8 to 10 women in the room in the paintings, right? And so that was kind of what drew me to it. The reason for these paintings was often to give women hope and to give women confidence. Like, they would look, I mean, as you know, in Italy at the time, you know, Mary was the icon, right? And so if she can do it, we can do it, you know? So it was sort of, that's why these paintings were kind of important to women at the time. You remember the very popular show ER? Well, once a year they had a birth complication in the ER. And every time after that in class, we had to debrief for an hour over that TV show because everyone had seen it. But we in class had a training behind us to debrief to what was going on and why it had happened. But your average woman watching that show was terrified, right? Absolutely terrified. And so we decided that we would do a survey of university students, both men and women, at the University of British Columbia. What was very interesting was, I think it was about 9 or 10% felt that they would choose to have a cesarean. And one of the main reasons was fear of pain. So one of the roles of the midwife then is to work with that.
I didn't fear birth. My one grandmother had 10 children, my other had 4 children, and birth didn't seem frightening. When my aunts talked about birth, it wasn't a terrible experience. So I didn't come to giving birth myself with negative feelings. Oh, I'm Marla Gross, midwife from Manitoba. Okay. Oxytocin is a hormone that is in abundance in pregnancy and labor and birth, and it's the love hormone. There's all kinds of research out there. There's a Dr. Michel Odant from France who's really looked into this and described it for us, written a book about it. Anyway, I really think he calls it a shy hormone, and I really think being in our own home, if it's in our living room, our family room, or our bedroom where our baby was conceived, that hormone has a better opportunity to flow. And I think that's partly what people feel, why people feel more comfortable in their own surroundings, is because their oxytocin level is in more abundance.
A lot of people, they think, you know, you've got to be crazy to have a baby at home.
Some people say you have to be crazy to have a baby in a hospital. When we think of birth as a normal physiological event, it takes the fear away. We know how to sneeze, we know how to digest food, we know how to conceive, and we also know how to birth. There are potential complications, but there are also complications for some people with digestion. It's dangerous to walk across the street for some people. Making the space around the woman as comfortable as possible reduces her anxiety and increases her confidence and just helps the flow of labor go. I don't know exactly what the difference is, but I think babies born at home don't cry as much. I think there's less screaming. There's also less mess at home or with a midwife attended birth, even in the hospital. Babies have it's just a calmer process. They're not handled roughly when they're born. They aren't taken awake. The cord is, you know, isn't cut immediately and taken away. Even some doctors now are doing a delayed cord clamping, but maybe for a minute. We leave that cord attached, maybe even till the placenta is born. Like there's no need, unless there's bleeding from the mom, there's no need to clamp and cut that cord. There's a lot less panic. There's a lot of a lot less cheering. Sometimes in the hospital, there's like, I want to get pom-poms for the nurses because they're cheering so hard and so loud for that woman to push that baby out. And when I'm the primary at a birth, I like everyone to be really quiet. If there's trauma to the baby, if the baby's not breathing right away, I ask the nurses to not talk, and I ask the parents to talk because I want that baby to hear his mom and dad's voices and their prayer for him to, come on, baby, breathe, you can do it, come to us, wake up, look at us, we love you. Whatever they say, that baby needs to hear that. And if they just hear all the rustle and bustle about behind them of people, they're interrupting that process. I was having babies again right now, I think I would still choose to have my baby at home, but the birthing center is a beautiful place, and if I was a practicing midwife in Winnipeg, I would be promoting the birthing center because the birthing center is very spacious and calm and comfortable. I think it's nicer for the midwives too. Like, when we do home births, we have a trunk load of gear that we haul around and haul it in and haul it out, and it's a lot of work. I think that's another reason older midwives just, maybe they think the birthing center or the hospital is easier because that doesn't mean they have to require as much, it doesn't require them to carry around as much equipment.
You don't have to set up a pool in the living room.
The pool didn't bother me. The dads usually like to do that. I had two big suitcases full of stuff, you know, and oxygen tanks were the heaviest. and I got smarter as I got older and just prepared them in the pregnancy that when I got there, I'd need dad to come out and help me unload the car. So he did. And usually it was arranged and they were informed that they would want to set up their birth pool maybe a few days before the baby's due.
And that's a dad thing.
That's a dad thing. They love it. They need to do something. They boiled water for my tea, and now what are they going to do, right?
Pretty sure there's four lines, though.
We can take a peek.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Gary.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
We're just opening a primary care clinic for all of our patients that don't have a family doctor when we discharge them. I'm Lisa Axel, and I'm the director of the South Community Birth Program And I'm also a practicing midwife in Vancouver. The smaller your community, the harder it gets. You get down to a community that has only got two midwives, there's really no downtime ever, because if you're off, you actually have to kind of leave the country, leave your town, or they'll find you, you know what I mean? Because two women can go into labor at once. So it is a good solution in smaller communities for midwives and family doctors to team up, particularly if you're in a community where there's no obstetrician or pediatrician, because family doctors can help fill in some of that scope. The program started in 2003. At the time, I was the head of midwifery at Women's Hospital, and Dr. Sue Harris was the head of family practice at Women's Hospital in Vancouver, and we decided to try to plan a project where midwives and family doctors could collaborate. We did our first birth in April of 2004, and we have doulas. And a doula takes a weekend course, and they're there to support women in labor. And we also, the other component of our program, besides midwives and family doctors sharing care, is connecting pregnancy. And connecting pregnancy is a way to provide prenatal care in groups, and you get your medical care while you're in the group. So you slip out of group to get your belly check. Every woman who comes to group or not to group checks their own blood pressure, weight, and does a urine dipstick. And it's 2 hours, and it's just themes all the way through, including several on labor and birth. And it's not a lecture. There isn't somebody standing at the front of the room doing a didactic lecture about pregnancy and birth. There is a curriculum that's followed over 10 weeks, but it's very fluid. So things come up. Somebody gets hypertension, and then it might be that 15 or 20 minutes of the group is spent on hypertension, because now everybody wants to know about it. One of the biggest benefits we find is after they're discharged from care. That's always hard to do, and it's hard for them to leave because there's a sense of community. But when they're discharged from group at 6 weeks postpartum, many of those women continue to meet every week, and they'll meet in the park, they'll meet at the library, they'll meet with their babies, they can call each other, because how wonderful it is for women to get a year off, it also can be very isolating and very frightening for women to suddenly be alone with the baby or a couple of small kids and a baby. So now they have a built-in network of women who have a baby exactly the same time they do. I'm Lisa Axel, and I'm the director of the South Community Birth Program, and I'm also a practicing midwife in Vancouver. We have 40 doulas in our program, and between them, they speak 22 languages other than English. Our doulas are women in their communities, so they're very highly regarded. They offer very women-centered care. We have an event called Meet the Team, because we all share call, we all take a slot on call. So when you go, you may have most of your prenatal care by a midwife, but you might get the physician on call in labor. For us, it's really important that that part is seamless. Midwives did water births, family doctors didn't do it, so they trained to do water births. That you can't pass off call if you're a midwife to a doctor that won't do what you will do, and vice versa. We've got a crisis in Canada where we don't have enough maternity care providers, and family doctors are dropping out all the time. Here at South, we're training our family doctors to be able to do home births. They're very excited, and we have some home births coming up, and they're all, you know, paying attention. If they're off call, they still want to come because they want to get the training.
There's been a lot of publicity about the British Columbia data set, where we find that women giving birth at home do as well on many different parameters as women giving birth in the hospital. What we haven't measured yet is the long-term effects. Does that give me more confidence as a mother, and therefore I don't take my child to the emergency room once a month because they're coughing, you know, in my first 5 years of life? I mean, that's the work that needs to be done after midwives have been regulated for longer, is to look at, yeah, does that kind of, and maybe it's not even just midwives, but does birth at home or birth without surgery give you more confidence in yourself too, and that follows through in the rest of your life? And therefore, because women, we know, make most of the healthcare decisions for their families. My name is Elaine Carty, and I am a midwife and a professor and a nurse and a mother. Most of my career has been spent trying to make change in the system for a number of things. It became clear to me that it wasn't right that women couldn't choose midwives in New Brunswick, where I was practicing. And now, 50 years later, they still can't choose a midwife. So
in New Brunswick.
In New Brunswick. So that really upset me. And then when my husband and I moved to Ontario, that's where a group of us got together to begin the Ontario Midwives Association. So it was really a group of midwives and nurses and a very famous obstetrician, Murray Enkin, from McMaster University, who was firmly believed in midwifery. And this was in the 70s. And then we moved to British Columbia. Things, you know, the career progresses. And here, some of my early research was with women with disabilities who are pregnant. And it was my advocacy then that around that question too that got me going. I was so upset that anyone who had a disability shouldn't have been offered a termination right away. And so there was no sort of, let's think about how we can do this birth and so on and so forth. So I began working with a woman in rehabilitation sciences who actually had experience with going to people's homes and helping them have sex, because she would help them position, you know, from a rehab point of view, physical therapist point of view, she knew how their limbs could work. And so I was so inspired by the work she was doing. And she said, you know, she said, my clients are going to get pregnant now, and then what? You know, so you have to get involved and you have to help them find ways to give birth and give birth naturally, you know, and not be offered a termination right away. So, and then I was doing research on early discharge from hospital, and people thought that was a bad thing. Women should stay in hospital for 10 days. And we were doing research to show that no, if women went home right away to their home their own beds and their own families, you know, that they would do better. And then...
And the research upheld that.
Upheld that, absolutely. And we're there now, right? And then we were fighting for midwifery legislation here, and I did a research grant for an out-of-hospital birth center as well here, and that caused a huge fuss in Vancouver. The university, the president's office, actually set up a special committee to determine if we were funded to do a birth center, would they administer the money, because they were getting so many complaints from the physician community in Vancouver that this wouldn't be safe and the university shouldn't be involved. And the only other time the president's office had set up such a committee was for a marijuana study. And they had to decide whether they would administer the funds for that. So the birth center and the marijuana study were in the same category. And finally, I was still being a professor here in the School of Nursing, and finally I remember at one point when midwifery became regulated in British Columbia, for me to become regulated at that point and at my sort of age was going to require me to quit my job at the university and work full-time as a midwife in order to do that. And I made the choice not to do that. And because I had more research I wanted to do. And it's interesting, my husband said to me, well, as I look back over the years, he said, I think you're in all these things for the chase. You know, he said, that's your job, is to actually push it and push and push and push, and then, you know, try and get things to happen where there's been injustice in some ways, and then move on to the next thing, you know, and work on that. So I guess that's when I think about what the chase for midwifery has meant to me, because that's been 40 years of chase, you know, and work and advocacy and push. I believe in my heart, in my gut, in my brain that it's the right thing for women giving birth to be able to be attended by a midwife. There aren't many relationships in our busy world where people actually sit down together for 45 minutes and where someone just lets you be the focus of attention, right? I mean, often we sit down, we have reciprocal relationships with our friends and things, but in this kind of a healthcare relationship, the woman really is the center, and the midwife is listening to her.
You taught me.
It's really about love. This is my thing. We had a little birthday party when I retired. We invited lots of the families I've helped to celebrate their births. And I was talking about that at my little speech at the end. And everything, like I just listed all the things I loved about birth. And really, if we could just love more in our lives. So if I help someone feel more confident about their body and their relationship, if I love them and help them learn to love their themselves and their spouse and their baby, I'm successful. I'm happy. I die a happy woman if I've helped someone else learn to love more, because that's what this is all about. I mean, how did we conceive that baby? There's a little love going on there, right? This is Marla Gross. I'm Marla Gross, midwife in Manitoba. I decided a few years ago that I would love to collect birth stories, and I wish I had been collecting birth stories from my granny and grandma and aunts. Because all the other mothers of the women I've helped, they would always tell me their birth stories. So this is my project now. I'm going to interview women and ask them to tell me about their births. And there was a study done, I think, in the 80s or early 90s by someone studying Alzheimer's. And they found that women didn't know their children, didn't know the caregiver, didn't know what they ate 10 minutes ago, but they would tell you their birth story. It's a monumental experience in a woman's life. So I decided, because my friend's mother just passed away at the age of 97, and for the past several years, I've been saying, I gotta come over and visit you, Pearl, and I want you to tell me your birth stories. And then she passed away before I did it. I just retired, and I thought this would be a good time to do it, and she didn't hang around long enough. But that spurred me on to, I just called three other 90-something-year-olds that I know, and I went out and visited them yesterday and began this project of birth story collection. Now I'm going to start with the oldest women I know and work down. So, what is midwifery? It's a whole lot of things. Who is a midwife? It's actually a political statement to be actively involved in midwifery. It's a profession of passion and compassion and patience and wisdom and encouragement and love, and sometimes, you know, chastisement, usually about diet or supplements. It's a little bit frightening, and it's exhilarating, and it's exhausting.
You've been listening to 12 Canadians, Building a Better World from the Inside Out. Learn more about midwifery care and subscribe to our podcasts at greenplanetmonitor.net. Huge thanks to the Social Justice Fund of the Canadian Auto Workers Union for their generous support. Thanks as well to CKUW, University of Winnipeg Radio. 12 Canadians is created by Earth Chronicle Productions, Winnipeg, Canada. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Bye for now.